Welcome back for another episode of the Bad Movies Worst Opinions podcast. We will get to our review of Scream 3 coming up in a bit. I want to remind you guys to go on our Instagram page at Bad Movies Worst Opinions. Be sure to vote what movie you want us to do for the final movie of October. We are doing all scary movies. You guys know the rules. It has to be a scary movie. It has to be rated below a 6.0 on IMDb. Be sure to go on the Instagram page and fill it out. Next week is the 20-year anniversary of The Grudge, so that is the last movie that I have picked, and then you guys can pick a movie. All right, without further ado, let's get to our review of Scream 3.
Hello, Sydney. Welcome to the final act.
There is one mystery more terrifying than you know.
Who is this?
Do you want to have this conversation with a polygraph?
Is that a threat?
When it's a threat, you'll know it.
Was that a threat?
There is one secret that can never be revealed until the end.
Anyone, including the main character, can die. This means you, Sid.
From suspense master Wes Craven, comes the final chapter in the terrifying trilogy. Scream 3.
Welcome into the Bad Movies Worst Opinions podcast, where we believe that everybody has a favorite bad movie. The only rule of the podcast is that we must watch a movie that's rated below a 6.0 on IMDb. Today is a special day. One of my favorite married couples has finally decided to come on the podcast. I wanted to do I Think I Love My Wife with these two people, and they had no interest in doing it. Brian Kennedy, Keish Kennedy, welcome on to the Bad Movies Worst Opinions podcast. Brian, we're here because you picked a scary movie.
Hey, you know, hey, we was already starting the Scream marathon, so when you put that on the list, I was like, that's the one we got to show up for.
That's the one.
Keish, are you excited about being on this podcast?
I'm very excited. I'm happy to be here. It's special movie. I love spooky season, so it's perfect. It worked out. It worked out well.
So we are watching scary movies for the month of October. This week's movie is Scream 3. Scream 3 is a 5.7 on IMDb. Let's just kick this off with the first question of the podcast. Scream 1 is a 7.4. Scream 2 is a 6.3. Why do you think this movie is not as well received as the first two Scream movies?
Revisiting it, first of all, I am a Scream fanatic. Love Scream, everything about it. Up until, I think they're at 7 or 8 at this point, I'm not sure, but I watched them all. This one, I just felt like when I was rewatching it, I felt like there were moments where I was like, is this a joke? Is this a comedy? Is this a parody? Like, I'm not scared at all. Like, there were jump scares, there were moments, but it just wasn't giving what the brutality that Scream 1 gave and Scream 2, it didn't give that for me.
I fully agree. They took it to Hollywood with the third one, if I'm just being honest. That's how I felt when I was rewatching it. Everything was over the top. It was too extra. Just they did way too much for this one.
So this movie came out on February 4th of 2000 as a runtime of 117 minutes. The budget was $40 million. It made $161.8 million at the box office.
Wow.
Let me give you the box office for this one. This is peak early 2000s. Debuting at number one that month was Scream 3 at $34.7 million. Number two was Hurricane at $4.9 million. Stuart Little came in at number three at $4.7 million. Next Friday was in the box office at $4.2 million. And Eye of the Beholder was the fifth movie. I have never heard of Eye of the Beholder. I've seen the first four movies. No clue what Eye of the Beholder could be.
I haven't seen Hurricane or Eye of the Beholder. I haven't seen either one of them two.
You would like Hurricane. Hurricane's with Denzel Washington. He's a wrongly convicted boxer.
She's never seen any Denzel movies.
She's seen Training Day and that's it.
You know I'm not going to see. You know I'm not watching that.
Scream 3 is typical Los Angeles. Everyone is stuck in traffic. Cotton Weary somehow has become Ryan Seacrest and is now the nation's number one talk show host. Cotton is on the phone talking big business when he gets a call from a stranger who he thinks is a PYT, but nope, it's the killer who is at his girlfriend's house. The killer uses Siri to change her voice.
So, you a big 100% Cotton fan?
Yeah, 110%.
That's very good. So, why don't you tell me who you are?
Ooh, you're a naughty boy, Cotton. Now, what would your girlfriend say?
What makes you think I have a girlfriend?
I know you do. I'm right outside her bathroom door.
To trick Cotton's lady, and he gets a 2-for-1 combo to kick off the movie, killing Cotton and his girl. I think this opening scene sets you up. This is not Scream 1. This is not Scream 2. You think of Scream 1. One of the five most iconic horror movie scenes, Drew Barrymore on the phone, yeah. Do you like a scary movie? In the second one, Jada Pinkett and Omar Epps, yeah. It plays on the whole black people get killed early, a great scene.
Yeah.
This is nowhere close to the scene of the first two movies, and that kind of sums up Scream 3.
I haven't seen Scream 3 in a long time, for one, but when I was like watching it, because we just seen Scream 2 probably like less than a week ago. I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. Cotton Weary's back. And then I forgot low-key that he died.
I thought like, he had a bigger part.
I did, too. Like, no lie. I definitely was like, oh, yeah, that's right. I thought he was actually the killer more. Because that's how much I forgot to just actually Scream 3. And I was like, that's right. He back in this one. Then he died off in the beginning. I was like, what are we doing here? Where is this movie going after this?
Okay, for me, when I saw the beginning and I'm like, okay, we playing a different game here when Ghostface broke in and had the voice of Cotton Weary, I thought, okay, this is about to be a game changer. This is going to be amazing, but it was a letdown. I like the calls. I like the, what's your favorite scary movie? I did miss that in the beginning. I don't know why it went left like that, but.
Why was he there?
I think the parody was he had a cameo in Scream 3, so he wasn't really in, or Stab 3. He wasn't in Stab 3 for very long, so he also isn't in Scream 3 for very long. That's what I think they were trying to play off of. Like,
who's his character in Stab 3?
I think he's right, because that's the
order. I
think he
plays himself in Stab 3.
Okay.
And then remember they said he was the first one to get killed. It was the order. So he was in the first one to get killed in Scream 3. This was my biggest question I was watching it. This guy was famous because he was wrongly convicted for killing somebody, and then he would just become Steve Harvey? No, that's not how real life would work. You would not just become Kelly Ripa.
The ending of the show from Scream 2, he took advantage of his 15 minutes of fame. They got that Diane Sawyer
100%
interview.
Cotton.
So, he took it to the top.
When you think about it, man, that was really like TikTok famous back in like 2001. Like now you just get famous on TikTok. If you was famous back then, they would just give you a talk show and see if you were good at it. That's you true. Might not be good at it, but they would at least try for 6 months. This was my biggest complaint of the whole movie, and I don't want to get too far either, Brian. They realized that the killer had voice technology and then would fall for a phone call for the rest of the movie.
I don't want to go too far ahead either, so I'm not going to, I'm on the same page as you. There was one part in the movie and I'm like, why? Wait, do we not realize what's happening by now?
You guys found the little voice changer and still are taking phone calls and talking.
That was after, though. They found it at the end. So, I mean, it kind of matched up. And that's when Dewey said, do I know this is really you? When he was talking
about when he couldn't go in the basement.
You're right.
The last
They never told Sydney, though, like, this person can play games with you. Like, they never communicate enough in scary movies.
I will say this about Sydney, and she's about to come up in the movie. Sydney has the I look like I'm about to cry better than almost any actress in Hollywood. The whole time she is on screen, she looks like at any moment she could just have a recollection of her dead mother and just break out in tears.
She pulls it off effortlessly. She looks beautiful doing it. You know, there are some actresses that I won't name, but she actually looks good when she has those watery eyes and the kind of that scrunched up face. Like, she was able to perfect that throughout the Scream years, I would say. It's a cult classic because of that.
She definitely pulls that off very well.
What do you think Sydney's Madden agility is? Because she is incredible.
She ran out of 90-92 easy.
Her change of direction when the
girl... I don't know what that means.
When she caught herself busting through that empty set door and could have fell through. She was holding on and ripped the screen.
She was shifty and Sydney could take a punch.
Oh,
brother. Her brother was... They were like
wailing. Oh, that's a real sibling fight they was having.
Yeah, Sydney could take a punch. So Sydney is now working for a teen hotline and peacefully trying to live her life. Gail Weathers is still well being Gail Weathers, and the news of Cotton Weary and his girl's death have now become public. We are on the set of Stab 3, and the tensions are running high because of Cotton's untimely demise after his cameo in this film. Gail Weathers appears on set, and after a witty exchange with the woman playing her in the movie, she runs into Dewey. The parody characters, I don't think any of them were good.
None of them.
I did like the black dude.
For Randy?
Yeah. You know what? Fake Gail Weathers was okay.
She was okay. Just extra.
The other new characters that they tried to introduce
Sydney,
in this
she
movie.
Was whack.
Yeah, they just didn't really do it for me. Like, this movie needed more Sydney, more Gail Weathers, more Dewey. I didn't need fake Gale Weathers tagging along for any of the adventures.
They got fake Dewey up out of there so fast.
Good. He was an asshole. I hated his character.
Real Dewey, going back and watching those movies as a 40-year-old, I used to, before now, I used to love Dewey. Now I'm realizing how corny.
Dewey's
how corny.
You didn't realize Dewey was corny back then?
I didn't realize. I thought he was hitting Gale with the zingers back on. But it was the most corny thing. Hi. Yeah, I can't even think of some of the corniest things that he was saying to her, but I was just like, that's weird. Like, you didn't, that wasn't a burn. But, I think I overhyped Dewey in my
was
mind.
Dewey was the whack cop to his cool sister that died in the first one.
Yeah, that's Rose McGowan, who had the titties in Scream 1. Hey, I'm going to tell you that. Hey, I was a little disappointed.
What's the girl, the new girl? She was the original Sydney
Sweeney. Sydney Sweeney.
Yeah, Sydney Sweeney got them bangs on
her. She absolutely did. You know what? You know they big whenever Keisha in it. Yo, her titties is big.
Hey, you didn't see her in some compromising positions on Euphoria, so yeah.
Back at the Prescott estate, Sydney was asking why her mom was running around town all willy-nilly, and her pops is telling her, Sydney, it's time to come home. We talked to Maureen Prescott at least 5 separate times in this movie. Too many visions of Maureen Prescott. Bro, we don't care. So we are back on the set of Stab 3, and Jenny McCarthy can't find Roman, the director. Roman wants to go over the lines and her role in the movie. She's playing Candy, the blonde baddie who gets killed second. Well, she goes looking for Roman, but instead she finds Uncle Charles at the crossroads. Now she's dead. Yo, they didn't have Jenny McCarthy in the movie long enough for me, dog. Yeah, they didn't have Jenny McCarthy.
They got her up out of here quick.
Real fast.
I can just guess back in 2000, they was really selling, yo, Jenny McCarthy is in new Scream 3. No, she's not. She's not in Scream. She's in Scream 3 for 8 minutes.
But that's in true Scream fashion, because Drew Barrymore, big star, died right away, Scream 1. Jada Pinkett, and I don't know if she was a Smith then, but Jada Pinkett and Omar Epps?
Yeah, it was Omar Epps.
Very big stars during that time. I know Brian kind of questioned that, but I think they were at the top of, not the top, but they were climbing, so they were very important people. So maybe that's what they were trying to do. It was missed on me, though. Yeah. I don't understand. I think that's what they were trying to do, though.
They definitely moved it around, like keeping her short, but yeah, she was a character long enough, and then they just killed her off. Like I said, the third person, I think, is when she was killed off, but she just didn't have enough scenes in the movie to really even be They were just using her name.
The whole shock of, like, Drew Barrymore, like, you're right, like, when you see it's a new franchise and then Drew Barrymore's on the screen, it catch you like, wow, they killed Drew Barrymore.
Right.
You could tell they were about to kill Jenny McCarthy.
Well, yeah,
whenever Black Randy walks past her and says, I haven't seen him all day, oh, you about to get killed. We know you're
you in there by yourself.
Yeah.
I heard just being scared. Girl, get out of there.
You know it's a serial killer out here, and you should never be by yourself. I don't know why in these scary movies they always want to just...
The predictability of it all.
Right.
Yeah, they want to always go off by themselves. So we learned that the killer is killing the real-life actors in the order that they die in the movie. Gale Weathers' character is next. The killer is also leaving pictures of Mama Prescott on the dead bodies. The cop attention is now turned to Roman because he was the last person to talk to Candy who was alive.
Roman Bridger. What?
Mr. Bridger, you didn't tell us you spoke with Sarah Darling before she was murdered.
Spoke with her when?
Guard says she was here for a meeting with you.
What meeting? We talked to her roommate, too. Says you called Sarah, told her to come down to the studio. Roommate answered the phone, says it was you.
Wait a minute. No, I never called her. I never told her to go anywhere.
Roommate says she knows your voice, Mr. Bridger.
Well, she wasn't speaking with me. God, look, I did not call Sarah Darling.
Sarah Darling said you did.
Someone's trying to ruin my movie. Someone wants to kill my movie.
All right, we'll talk about your movie down at the station. Okay? All right, this is the scene where you come with us.
Sydney is back at the teen helpline and gets a call from the killer disguised as her mom's voice. Sydney Prescott had a gun for the first time in horror movie history. The main character ain't never got a gun, bro. Never. They never equip. She had a gun, and she had mace in this movie. She was walking around with that mace like it was Resident Evil.
She learned quick from the previous two movies as far as how her lifestyle would go. She needed something.
She was ready. I have a comment about the Maureen Prescott phone calls and the Maureen Prescott sightings. That kind of threw me off as far as, like, there were too many sightings of her in this movie, because part of me is like, okay, I know that she's really not seeing this woman. But then when she goes to visit fake Woodsboro, this Maureen Prescott person comes up too. And I'm just like, is this actually the killer? Is she seeing things? Like, what's happening? And I think they didn't really... And I guess it's a good thing we didn't have to explore that, but I was just like, okay, is Sydney going crazy? And then all of a sudden, Sydney's not crazy anymore. to make another Scream. It just felt like that
was a lie. The way things did transpire, because, like, between this time, like, the killer had reached out to Sydney. Like, how did that happen? She was supposed to be off the grid. Like, and then Dewey, I guess, told the detective, and it was, like, just a ploy to throw us off as far as who we would think was the killer, that he had her phone number. So how did the actual killer ever reach Sydney when she was working for, and he called the home line, not the office line?
Or was that the killer that called Sydney, pretending to be Maureen Prescott, or was that one of her hallucinations?
I think it was that more than anything, as far as just like once it all came to the end, because he was talking about he was following her life, Maureen Prescott's life the whole time, ended up seeing all the affairs that she had.
You talking about Roman?
Yeah. Okay. So that's why I was like, but it still never transpired how he was able to find her and get a hold of her via the phone call.
Did you guys know who the killer was? I thought it was the detective.
I thought
the
it was
time.
Too.
Yeah.
The detective, because especially when they had that conversation in the precinct.
He was popping up too quick in the places, man.
Yeah.
They do a good job.
Patrick Scream, Dempsey, this is you. You got this.
Yeah. Scream does a really good job of throwing you out. Again, like I said, a lot of the killing scenes are predictable, but they do a really good job of throwing you off the scent of who might be the killer. I'm trying to remember, without taking too much time, who I thought the killer was in 1 and 2. I can't really remember now, but I definitely thought in 3 that it was the detective.
Fake Gail Weathers is having a shindig at her house. Real Gail Weathers crashes the party with some information. The cops know about the clone cell phone calls and that the killer is leaving very specific pictures of Maureen Prescott. The celebrity bodyguard to the stars is unalived by the killer while going to check on Dewey's trailer. Why was that guy going to check on Dewey? That guy hated Dewey.
He deserved to die.
He deserved to die.
He did what he said to the killer before he died.
That was
some effed up stuff.
Yeah,
like,
that was nuts.
You're gonna, I forgot what he said. Something about you're gonna die like your sister did.
Yeah, like
and
your
I was
sister
like,
did. Yeah.
Fuck you. Like, get out of here.
I like how you edited yourself and he just got so mad.
It's a habit.
And he edited himself. The bodyguard had the most 2000s white boy glasses I've ever seen in my life. Those were some Oakley Those was the Carson Daly TRL joints that he had on.
I like the actor that played him too. I don't know his name, but he has that same voice every time he's in something.
Every role.
Yeah, I like him.
Definitely
I like
the
him.
Same guy.
Back in the big house, the killer is sending facts to let you know that this is the 2000s. He's sending facts to the cast, and he is rewriting the script in real time.
It's the facts! Interior Jennifer's house, living room night, the script page.
Oh, what's it say?
The bodyguard stabbed to death, the 5 stand trapped.
He's rewriting the movie.
As the killer waits outside, suddenly the fax machine sends news of their fates.
It's a trap! Everybody outside!
Outside where he can pick us off one by one?
The killer prepares to grant mercy to only one of them.
You get it? The killer says he's outside because he wants us here inside.
Which one is it?
Come on!
He then blows up the house. At that point, I'm like, bro, what are we doing here? This is not Scream. What are we doing?
And that's when I was looking at it, watching it last night, and I thought to myself, is this a comedy? Because remember, they were running back and forth in the house, screaming, trying to read this fax. And I know that was supposed to build suspense for the audience. It didn't do it for me, though. I don't know if that translated to you guys, but it just didn't. There was no suspense there for me. Like, oh, what's going to happen next? Like, something's going to happen.
It took a different spin. But I guess the whole point was because they said, with this being a trilogy, anything can happen. But that's where it kind of took the crazy. It took like a Saw turn, like, to me. What would make him think premeditated that somebody's going to be in there without lights and turn on a lighter. And have the gas blow up the whole house? Like, what? They could have just took all the facts outside and just read them. Like,
and we love Scream for the stabbing.
Right.
I don't want to see somebody.
That's where
part.
It went to Hollywood for me. Like, it was trying to be over the top and extra at that point.
Yeah. Yeah, because at that point, if you just kill fake Dewey and the killer is behind him and he just stabs him, that's what you come to expect. I'm with you. Like, they tried to throw you off the scent of, like, hey, this one has to be different from the other ones. For the moment, it, like, tried to turn into an action movie. Wait, they blow up the house and now they're rolling down the hill? Like, bro, this is not Scream. What are y'all doing here?
This is crazy.
So while they're jumping away from the exploding house, the cast rows down a hill. At the bottom of the hill, Dewey spots the killer trying to attack Gail, and he gets a couple of shots off. Dewey was a dead eye there.
Oh, yeah.
He connected about 2 or 3 times. Now, I don't know why it didn't come up why later we find out who the killer is. He didn't have any damage. But, man, Dewey connected a couple of
times. It was the bulletproof vest when he showed it later after Sydney was shooting.
Yeah, I know, but I just know he was just, I know he's 50 seasons walking around with it all the time. He just had it in any occasion.
My concern is Dewey's disability and how it changes throughout.
He went from limping to having
that. Should I say that? Because on Scream 2, he had more of like this going on. on Scream 3, it kind of opened up to where he was able to run because he ran. I'm glad there's no video. No
physical therapy.
He ran
physical therapy
so fast to like do that. And like I said, he was dead on with it. But I'm just like, I was watching it like, well, damn, does it hurt? Does it hurt when he's running, or what dewy are we getting here? So yeah, that kind of blew my mind too. You know, just trying to figure out like, okay, what's the disability? What's going on?
He definitely he has some changes to the disability.
can you do the fake dewy run for me again?
Just as long as there's no video.
Okay. Just, the way you was
the first he was like this, open it up in Scream 3. Yeah, he was more like this.
The parody in Scary Movie. That's what made it so fun when the guy
I
kind of put those two together.
That's what made it funny to me. Like, okay, is this a comedy?
Fake Gale and real Gale are now fighting over Dewey, and our group finds another picture of Maureen Prescott saying, "I killed her," written on the back. The detective Kincaid, who was just a shadowy figure the whole movie, he is applying pressure to Dewey to find out where Sydney is. Well, speak of the devil, Sydney just magically shows up at the precinct, and she is ready to help the investigation. She wants to be shown the set of Stab 3. On the set, Randy's sister has a tape that Randy recorded before his passing, and of course, Randy has to give his trilogy rules.
You are dealing with the concluding chapter of a trilogy.
Trilogy.
That's right. It's a rarity in the horror field, but it does exist. And it is a force to be reckoned with, because true trilogies are all about going back to the beginning and discovering something that wasn't true from the get-go. Godfather, Jedi, all revealed something that we thought was true that wasn't true. So if it is a trilogy you are dealing with, here are some super trilogy rules. 1, you got a killer who's going to be superhuman. Stabbing him won't work. Shooting him won't work. Basically, in the third one, you got to cryogenically freeze his head, decapitate him, or blow him up. 2, anyone, including the main character, can die. This means you, Sid. I'm sorry. It's the final chapter. It could be fucking Reservoir Dogs by the time this thing is through. 3, the past will come back to bite you in the ass. Whatever you think you know about the past, forget it. The past is not at rest. Any sins you think were committed in the past are about to break out and destroy you. So in closing, let me say, good luck, Godspeed, and for some of you, I'll see you soon. Because the rules say some of you ain't gonna make it. I didn't. Not if you're watching this tape.
This is my favorite part in the whole
movie. That is the great part. Randy is the key to literally probably the first
Randy
three
shouldn't have died in part 2.
Yeah, for sure.
He had
sex in part 2.
he had sex.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, I didn't even put that together. Yeah, he did have it with Creepy Karen, Chris. I forgot the name.
Randy coming in the middle of the movie the trilogy rules was perfect.
That was perfect.
I probably would have done the trilogy rules before the house blowing up to kind of set you up for like, hey, something big is about to happen.
Yeah, that makes sense.
The fact that it happened afterwards, you're like, oh. But no, just seeing Randy on the screen, I enjoyed it, man.
Oh, yeah.
Randy's my favorite character in the whole series.
Seeing him rejuvenated me for it, because I remember thinking, oh, and he says, okay, part 3, it's a trilogy. This person's going to be superhuman. You're going to think you killed him, but you didn't. You can't stab him. You can't. I'm like, oh shit, what are we dealing with? Like, oh my God, this is so exciting. It was just bulletproof vests. That's it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm like, oh, we getting superhuman, but no.
The piece that really, and even still rewatching them, it didn't make sense, but it like hyped me up for it is when he said, even Sydney can die. Like, you really knew at that point, because after the explosion and they doing that weird stuff, you think that this might be the last one, because usually back then, when did it come out, 2000?
Yeah, 2000.
We weren't getting more than three.
We didn't expect
movies.
More.
So we was like, dang, they might kill Sydney off in this much. She gonna die in this thing.
Or they would do 3, and then they would come back and do a prequel.
Yeah, like a prequel.
Like they would then do before, like, hey, how do we get to this point? Right, like they would do it like that way. But right, like the fact that
we would have found more about Maureen Prescott.
Yeah, that's what it would have been.
She was slugging it out. Oh, that girl was nasty.
It would have been an NC-17 movie.
Nasty.
Harvey Weinstein would have been in that one.
Okay.
I mean, it is funny though. Like now that we're having this conversation,
when I rewatched some of that stuff, and then with the whole Diddy Kabbalah apocalypse
Diddy-ish.
Right now, the secret screening room and stuff. Come on, now.
The mirrored in the bed. Yeah. I was like, okay, I can see what's happening here.
My two biggest takeaways from the Maureen Prescott storyline is 1. There's no way you could have this storyline today in a movie.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the storyline of the movie is basically Maureen Prescott was fucking for roles.
Yep.
And now, in a post-Harvey Weinstein, post-Louis C.K., there's no way you could have this. And 2 is, Yo, all of y'all knew about this. Like, this is the plot line of a major motion picture.
Somebody was trying to tell what they was doing. 100%. That's what I was getting every time when I watched it. I was like, they throwing this literally just right in our face.
No, definitely.
No way they weren't not doing this back
the
then.
The way they glazed over when they were interviewing or talking to Milton, the big screen, the executive or whatever.
Who is Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah, that's in that year they glossed over when he was like, oh, they might have just had a little fun with her. And then they kind of moved on. Right. And I'm thinking in my mind, like, wait, was it an R-word situation or what happened? So at this big age, I'm thinking like, well, dang, maybe she wasn't fucking for roles. Maybe she was getting manipulated and other things happened. And it's like, okay, now I understand. I kind of understand where Roman was coming from.
Yeah, but then it was kind of like an underlining theme of it that, like, some of the main characters, like the girl who wore the city role, basically was like, I can't believe I fucked Milton to get this role. Like, it was a theme in the movie.
They were throwing it right in our face that they doing
it. And we just watching it, eating it up. Yeah, it's a good scary movie.
100%. Like, basically, if you want to move up in Hollywood,
you got to do this right here.
You got to play the game, bro.
Period. The end. And that's the end of the story.
Yeah, no, you got to play the game.
Yeah.
Fake Gail and real Gail team up to do some investigative work on the set, and after some bribing, we get more information on Mama Prescott. She did some work in some early John Milton horror films under a pseudonym of Lena Reynolds. Good Carrie Fisher little cameo here. I was happy to see Princess Leia in the movie for just a little bit, and like she was talking about being I like that.
Yeah.
Excuse me, I am Gail Weathers, and I'm here researching with the police. This photo was taken at the studio. Her name is Maureen Prescott. Back then it was probably Roberts. Hey, are you...
No.
But you look just...
Like her? I've been hearing it all my life.
It's uncanny.
I was up for Princess Leia. I was this close. So who gets it? The one who sleeps with George Lucas.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to bring up a sore subject for you.
Sure you didn't. None of them did. So how can I help you? Or do you want me to tell you who you look like?
So while taking a walk around the old set, the killer pops up and tries to kill our leading lady. Dewey, Fake Gail, and Real Gail confront director Roman about Rena Reynolds and her true identity. The three get a call from the killer and actually believe it's Sydney calling them. Wait, the police have now told you that they are using voice technology. You get a call and Sydney is super short on the phone.
Did they say that yet?
Yeah,
I don't remember until Dewey and Gail find the actual criminal.
No, the cops then said, because remember they said, hey, that call wasn't traceable. We think it came from like a clone cell phone and all this thing. So like your suspicion should be up with the relationship that Sydney and Dewey have. There's no way you should fall for how short she was
Dewey
on the phone.
Yeah, Dewey
Why would Sydney go by herself to go meet with the director and then
She was with Kincaid. She said that. But still,
on the phone.
Everything was just very weird. Dewey should have had antennas up a little bit more.
Dewey, terrible detective.
He's not good at it. He's just not.
For Dewey to be a cop, he didn't uncover anything.
He hasn't been a cop since the first one with that injury.
He's only a consultant.
He's just a consultant for Hollywood.
The cast of the movie is at the Fiesta, and they have the bright idea to go looking around. There is a killer around. He is killing the cast members of your movie. And now you guys want to go look around?
I have a huge problem with that and more. First of all, the first thing they said to Fake Randy was, we're going to stay together. And then they split up.
They split up in two.
Exactly. Fake Gail and Roman, and then Fake Randy and Fake Sydney. I was like, well, I thought we were gonna going to stay together. What's happening? Like, ugh, that did annoy me.
Dewey and Real Gail find the voice contraption for the killer, and now they are on the hunt to go find the killer. Well, one down, Roman dead. Two down, Fake Sydney dead. Three down, Black Dude dead. I actually think the Black dude got the worst death out of the three people that at the moment.
Yeah, he got thrown over the joint.
It was a little over the top. He gave Black Randy a little extra. I forgot who it was. Throws a vase at the killer. And he just ate it and just kept going slicing and dicing, dog. Like, his strength was superhuman.
He was definitely on some superhuman strength. But, I mean, that was the rules for the trilogy. Them killers just be on something crazy.
My issue with that whole scene was, okay, I know you said they found the voice thing and they went looking for the killer. I thought they went looking for everyone else so they could leave the house. But at some point, do you say, you know what, me and Brian or me and Carrington, we together and every and things are happening. I already found one person dead. Carrington, we're going to have to get out of here. Yeah. I don't know.
Cindy's not coming
here. I don't know where Brian is. I love him, but he will want me to go ahead and leave. Like, searching this house that you're unfamiliar with for these people that I have literally... And as someone who's viewing this, I have no connection with anyone here except for Dewey and Gail. Leave. Yeah, you can leave. It's fine.
We have a running theme so far this month. You know what's the leading cause of death for white people in scary movies? Curiosity.
Yeah.
Curiosity gets them every single time.
I'm out.
Hey, I want to go see the screening room. Bro, that's the killing room now. That's your tomb, brother.
That is definitely the tomb.
Yeah, that is your tomb. The killer threw a knife at Dewey.
And it hit the butter. And he falls down the stairs.
He goes, and then falls down the stairs. What?
Well, no, but even what's more worse on top of that is Gail is down there in the basement. She goes to comfort Dewey. Girl, it's a killer right here. You either need to fight the killer or get out of there. What are you doing?
I don't think I even would have called Dewey if I thought that the killer or Ghostface was passed out. I would have tried to step over him because now...
Man, I'm getting a knife. I'm on the phone.
I might... That too. I'm on the phone. I might wake this person up and it's just... And then, like Carrington keeps mentioning, there is a voice thing now. So I don't even know if Dewey's going to believe that I'm calling him. I'm trying to save myself, but you know.
Yeah, Dewey has to ask a question to Gail that only Gail would know. Like,
and why didn't they do
it? Like, you two have something that only
they clearly did something.
You would say, Brian, what did we do on this thing? Yeah. Oh, we did X, Y, and Z. Like, y'all know each other well enough. You got to be quizzing at this point. Everybody's a suspect. That's what we learned about this. I can't get over the fact that the killer threw the knife like it was a boomerang and hit Dewey in the head, and then Dewey fell down the stairs.
Rolled down the stairs.
So Sydney is still at the precinct, and she gets a call from the killer, which gives her an ultimatum. You show up or your friends die. Sydney pulls up to Roman's house to help her friends, but the killer slaps her mid-rescue. She then outsmarts the killer. She shoots him. The detective shows up. At that point, I was like, bro, I knew he did it.
Yeah, he came around too fast.
Because you remember, they kind of set it up where...
And no partner either.
Yes, remember.
And Roman was dead.
Yes.
Well,
he was. We did think he was dead.
Air quotes.
Yeah, we did think he was dead. Because you remember, Sydney is at the precinct, and she's looking through the stuff. It's a lot of information about her. Like, wait, she's not a suspect. Why are you doing this?
Right.
And then we don't. So then he's not.
He went somewhere else.
Yes, I'm saying he's not at the police station. Yeah. And then when we get there, we see the killer. And then Patrick Dempsey shows. I'm like, bro.
How you know to come up here?
Yeah, you're not fooling me. Then when you convinced her to put the gun down, I was like, bro, you about to try to shoot Sidney Prescott here? So the killer finally reveals himself. Roman Bridger, the director. He's been him the whole time. He is Sidney's half-brother. Marine Prescott had and gave him up. He's gone mad.
Roman Bridger, director. And brother. She slammed the door in my face and she said I was Rena's child and Rena was dead. And it struck me. What a good idea. So I watched her. I made a little home movie, a little family film. It seems Maureen, Mom, she really got around. I mean, Cotton was one thing. Everybody knew about that. But Billy's father, that was the key. Your boyfriend didn't like seeing his daddy in my film too much. He didn't like it at all. Once I supplied the motivation, all the kid needed was a few pointers. Have a partner to sell out in case you get caught, find someone to frame. It was like he was making a movie.
You. This is all because of you.
The director said.
He kills John Milton, who had him trapped in the closet. Sydney and her brother get into a fight, and Sydney is down in the early rounds. We talked about it earlier. Bro, Sydney could take a punch, dog.
She's a fighter.
He beat her ass. He was punching her. He kicked her while she was down. He tried to strangle her to death.
Like,
she was the one. At this point, Sydney's superhuman. Like, she's the one.
She's an Avenger.
I can't take a punch like that. I'd play dead.
Yo, I will admit this. Sydney be talking spicy, too. Hey. Come and get me. Like, bro, you ain't seen him
when you done survived two death stares. your dang old boyfriend in one and going through the other one in the second shoot. I mean, you got a little spice. You got some kickback.
No, we definitely do. So we believe that Sydney is shot dead, but it's a horror movie, so of course she's not dead. She has on a 50-cent bulletproof vest. She turns the table, and now she's the killer as she stabs her brother 3 times. We are back in Nowhere, USA with our 3 friends, and Dewey finally pops the question to his one true love. The 3 plus the cop are set to watch a movie, and Sydney leaves the door unlocked. Feeling safe for the first time, she doesn't shut the door, goes into the living room to watch the movie, and this ends Scream 3.
Welcome to Foolish Club Media, your brand new home for all things Kansas City Chiefs and whatever else we want to talk about. Our beloved lineup of expert-led shows continues to bring you the most comprehensive coverage of the back-to-back Super Bowl champions. Catch up on all your favorite discussions with Show and BK, or stop in for the Daily Fix with Ron Hughley. Keep up on everything happening in Kansas City with Brian B. Shinen and Brian's World, or stop in for the latest NFL draft buzz with Beach Season. Subscribe at Foolish Club Media on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts.
Kansas City, food-wise, once only known as a barbecue town. But thanks to the Taco the Town podcast, everything has changed. Kansas City has rightfully taken its place as a taco paradise, smack dab in the middle of the USA, and all of these tacos belong to us on the Taco the Town podcast. My name is W. David Keith, certified tacoholic, and I live a very taco-centric lifestyle. On the Taco the Town podcast, we're tasting every taco in the town. We shine a light on all of the taco-rific tacos Kansas City has to offer, unearthing great taco memories, checking the latest stories in taco news, and interviewing actors, reporters, chefs, politicians, and musicians about their love for tacos. If you love tacos like I do, you're gonna love Taco the Town. Available wherever you get your taco podcasts. A proud member of the Lotus Pod Podcasting Network.
How do you guys like the ending?
What doesn't get, I guess, discussed enough is just, why did Dewey shoot so many bullets at a man running at him without shooting him in the head? Like, I'm very confused.
He let that clip go, and he just kept coming at him, bro.
Like, you should have known by then. That was too much of a dramatic scene for us to turn to Sidney Prescott and for her to have to tell you to shoot him in the head. He's running at you. Well, shoot something else. It's not working.
I want to know how many bullets he had in that gun, bro. Because remember, at first the bullet was empty. Like, he had a hole. He had clips in there.
The ending for me.
But no, that was the cop's gun I think he took.
Oh, yeah, he took the cop's gun
that wasn't shot at.
The ending for me did show ultimate safety. Sydney felt ultimate safety because the door, she shut it, didn't lock it, didn't turn on the alarm, and then the wind blew it open, right? And she left it open. For me, knowing that more, now that I know that more came, obviously more screams came, I felt like that was also kind of a hint to us, like, it's not over.
Yeah.
Even though nothing scary happened at the end, which I wish I had would have, but nothing scary happened at the end. It's just like, okay, you gonna leave that door open?
Let's see.
There's gonna be more.
Right.
I mean, they could have left it shut. Yeah, I mean, she
left the door open for more action.
And then the wind just blows it open and she's okay with it. Like, right. Nah, girl, you are never safe. It's 2024 and they're still making movies.
It's like a two-piece thing. Like, she is comfortable because she's a bad bitch, I guess, at this point. She's comfortable with it knowing she can go through anything. But yeah. But also with them leaving the door open, it's like that phrase, like, we left the door open for more things to happen.
Exactly. That's how I took it.
I think it actually, you can take it both ways. Like, I think at the end, like, if that's the way the Scream franchise ends, Dewey's happy, Gail's happy, Sydney feels safe. If that's the last movie that they make, is right. Now, I'm happy that they brought the series back.
Right.
I didn't really like 4 that much, but like these recent ones where like they bring Sydney back and they bring the OG characters back. I really like Scream. I'm really excited for them bringing this back next year.
I love Scream. I did start watching a little bit of 4 and it was kind of, I didn't finish it, but I know that it was more like a New Blood feel with it being her niece or cousin or something. But I remember watching 4 and not fully enjoying it. However, these last two, I think that Brian and I have both seen together. The last one, I loved it. It was brutal. Really, it went back to Scream 1, but I do have a question about the killer and how they did it in Scream 3. So we're used to having those two killers, right? Scream 1, Scream 2, two killers. I wonder why they didn't take advantage of having that second. I just get used to that.
The cop.
They should have. I don't know why they didn't take advantage of having that moment.
It would have made sense.
Because that's why I fell in love with Scream 1 with Billy Loomis and Stu. because I was like, this is crazy. Like, and then they're stabbing. I mean, it was just, it was a peak. It was the peak of like horror for me. Cause it's like, dang, they are both crazy. They have this huge plan. And then the second one was Billy's mom and a random student, right? A film student. I just felt like they kind of let me down with not doing those two killers like I'm used to.
I feel like Scream has held up for so long is because, you know, we all grew up around the same time. Like, Freddy is just, like, so unrealistic. Jason is so unrealistic. Yeah. Like, Scream works is because it feels real. Like, yeah, you have become attached to these characters. You like Sydney. You like Gail. You like Dewey. The, you know, the villain is always a human that is in the movie. So you're kind of trying to guess it. Like, it's kind of a mystery and a horror movie kind of tied into one. Like, it didn't really bother me that this movie isn't scary per se. Like, there's definitely, like, if you're looking for a horror movie, this isn't it.
Right. No.
But, and I think maybe, like, one of the good things about Saw and Bad Things is, like, it crossed over so much into pop culture that I thought they leaned in too much in this movie, and like it tried to be Scream within a Scream movie. Yeah. That at times, like, I want to see the classics. I want to see
exactly
the hits. I don't want to be introduced to seven new characters.
I have no character development for any. I don't care that fake Dewey blew up in that. I didn't have no feeling about it. I didn't care for any. So you're right. The movie inside a movie, I don't think they should do that again. But then as far as maybe they didn't do the two killer thing because he wasn't doing anything that two killers needed to do. Because that was a one man thing.
It definitely was one man until they got to the ending when he was doing, like, when they were going through that house and they were like, it was a point where the killer and somebody was like locked in a room and then he ended up getting somebody running down the stairs. And I was like, how did he go through there so fast? And that's why I thought it was two people. Like, and I thought the detective still was like gonna be part of it. Even
y'all
when he
gonna get
around
off of his back. Hey, he's, man, not listen, the killer. He's,
I
not
thought
one
he was
of
the killer.
It was a specific scene where that dude was just, he was too quick in two different places too fast.
Yeah, the movie is better if Patrick Dempsey grew up outside of, grew up outside of Westboro and just like was infatuated with the case and wanted to be like a copycat killer. That's when I forgot.
That's the formula.
Even if he would have found him, because I still liked the plot, like the theme of it where she's got the illegitimate son and he hates everything about Sydney, so now he wants to like offer
it. Made sense.
About her.
It was
that
believable.
Yeah, like that plot itself, it made sense and it pulled me into Roman, I guess. But he definitely should have had some help, like you said, from the cop. If he would have, like, somehow they would have got together and just all the years that he's seen of killings made him go crazy or whatever the case may be.
Or even just the file that Carrington mentioned that Sydney found, like, he was obsessed.
He was
like
obsessed
usually one killer is connected and one killer is obsessed, or the one that's connected talks the obsessed one into doing wild shit.
Right.
That's what happened with Billy Loomis and Stu. That's what happened with Billy Loomis's mom and the film student wanted to make a film. And then as they recycle this formula over and over again, I know Scream 4, it was the cousin and a boyfriend or something like that. Still kind of loose, but they were trying to get back to that because I feel like, obviously, it did good in the box office from Carrington's numbers in the beginning, but there is a huge difference in Scream 3 and Scream, between Scream 3, Scream 2, and Scream 4.
Yeah, that's why that IMDb is so trash.
That's why it's on the Bad Movies Worst Opinions podcast.
There you go.
So on Rotten Tomatoes, it has a 41% and an average rating of 5.1. The site's critical consensus reads, despite some surprising twists, Scream 3 sees the franchise falling back on some of the same old formula and cliches once hacked and slashed. That feels about right to me, at least for this movie. Yeah.
I agree.
It is a noticeable step down to me from Scream 1 and Scream 2. I think Scream 1 and Scream 2 are the best two movies of the franchise. And I'm with you. I really like the reboot. Like, 5 and 6 are really, really good.
Really
movies.
Good.
Yeah, 3 and 4 are a little kind of hazy to me. I did kind of like this movie. It's fun, but I just love the Scream franchise.
I'm with you. I love anything they do. If Scream,
I think I like the franchise
continues
more than
to make, yeah, if they continue to make movies, I'm going to be at the theater to see them every single time, because what they started with Scream 1 is so classic. It's become a cult classic, and I feel like we didn't have it in our generation. Like, our parents' generation probably had the Halloween series, which they'll probably go see every time it comes out, which I also love. I feel like Scream was our cult classic, so I'll be seeing that every time. And while watching the movie when it first came out, I loved it. I still loved it, you know. But when you pick it apart, it's like, okay, there are some discrepancies here.
It was
like,
just a lot of whack stuff, like, for instance, when they was showing, I think it was either Gail and Dewey, And the way Gail, who was, I guess, the Courtney Cox Arquette is the real Gail, she just screamed overly dumb at a specific scene. Those little things, like, why would they?
I know exactly the scene.
Man, it was such a horror. Like, it was, they were right there, and I think they might have seen somebody get killed or something, and she just went and just overly blurted out a scream. I'm like, no, that, I don't even think that was her. If I'm
they honest. Made her softer in Scream 3 than they did in Scream 2.
Yeah, she
Scream
was tough.
Scream 2, she was more, she was like.
Mentioned it like the, my girl would have went out here and just busted.
Yeah, stuff. She was more, she kind of played her character down more in Scream 3. I don't know why, but it was like.
She was trying to get chose by Dewey, man.
Yeah.
She was trying to come back home.
With those fringe bangs, ew.
She but, was trying to get home. We all love the franchise. What do you think this movie got right?
They got right keeping Sidney Prescott alive. I know that.
I was going to say something based around that, too. They got it right where Sidney, she is an anchor character that I can depend on being the exact same way, but not in like a monotone way, a monolith way, but like with range. But I know exactly what to expect from Sidney Prescott. While all those things were changing around her in the film with the movie inside a movie and all that goofy stuff happening, Sidney remains Sidney from Scream 1, from Scream 2, and into Scream 3. I think we got the same anxiety-ridden Sidney, but also she's going to fight for her friends till the death.
Neve Campbell is our Jamie Lee Curtis.
Absolutely.
Like, the way that she was, like, so synonymous with this series, like, you just can't, like, now you've seen it, there's no other actress you could have ever picked. Like, she is Sidney Prescott. I don't care what other movies she does. She was in House of Cards. Remember, we used to watch House of Cards? Like, oh, that's Sidney Prescott! Like, that's who she is now as a character. This movie works to me because of the relationship that has been built over the first two movies between Sidney, Dewey, and Gail.
Yeah.
That's how this movie works. That's Scream. That's the first three Scream movies. They obviously had to change the formula once you kind of reboot it, but that's how this movie works. It works off the relationship of them.
Absolutely. And the way that they changed the formula once they rebooted, I will always respect that, because I think at the beginning of 6, maybe, they made it clear Sydney's not coming back. Sydney's got kids and she is not like, they literally, I think that was in the script where it was, I don't know if it was New York Scream or if it was, it had to be New
She's
York
coming
Scream.
Back for the next one, so I am excited about that.
Well, good, because I was just like, but.
You got that bag.
But yeah, couldn't get the money right for the last one. That's what it was. Couldn't get that money right.
In the last Scream, they did taper our expectations. Like, she won't be in this movie. And I'm like, okay, I won't expect her. But now that you said she's coming back.
No, she's coming
I'm
back.
I'm very excited. I'm very excited. But the last Scream, they did a bang up job without her. And that's because the murders were so brutal. They went to 3 killers. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, that was so good. I cannot wait to get there.
What they got wrong, is it the same, like, the plot of this movie of having Scream 3 inside of Stab 3?
Yeah,
it missed the mark to me.
I agree. It was too much, and too many, the people that died, there were too many characters for me. I didn't really connect. Like you said, the glue that holds this series, series of movies together, Dewey, Gail, and Sidney. I'm making sure I'm not forgetting anybody, but yeah, those three.
Yeah, those are the three main staples. And I get like they were trying to, but they just did it way too much and it was unnecessary, because like obviously they had Stab 2 and the Scream 2. But like when the third one comes out, you don't have to bring out all these extra characters. But I mean, I guess you got to make some people to kill off because you ain't killing them three. So but well, they could have did it better than the way they did it, for sure.
Well, the thing is, just like we're calling these actors fake, we didn't even connect with any of these people. So in Scream 2, they did bring extra characters because you need to kill extra people. But I don't remember, but I know Sid had a boyfriend.
We should have met fake Sid in Scream 2. Yeah. Because they may stab too, and if Sidney keeps living, why didn't we ever know who she was?
Well, I think it was like they said, like some contest, and she ended up winning the contest. But like to our point, like about not connecting with them, like fake Sidney, she's supposed to win this contest. It's like a once in a lifetime opportunity. Her character was weak.
It fell flat.
I'm just meaning
she was
her character
stealing stuff from Pawn Stars. It was terrible.
It fell
bro.
Flat. So like even with Scream 2, I was able to connect with Sidney's new boyfriend. He did a whole thing in the cafeteria, professing his love to her. I was able to connect with even the film guy. Because him and Dwayne he and Randy Martin. Had like a not Dwayne Martin, the other killer. He
you
and Randy had like
you
a
back feeling connected to Dwayne Martin.
No.
He's in the Scream Hall of Fame.
He was they like, had a back go. And forth, but I feel like the dialogue here for these Stab 3 characters fell flat because we just weren't connected. They weren't ever themselves.
Yeah,
they were always just playing these parts. So
and they were just thrown out.
That's
there
where
too.
They went wrong. I think.
Like I said, I don't know how we didn't get. Any of the main characters that we knew Because we watched them watching when we saw Jada and Omar watching Stab 2. Why didn't we not see any of the people that we know we made it? There's no way that Sydney Prescott is now in Stab 3 that, and she wasn't in Stab 2. She stays alive.
Baby, we didn't. They only showed the beginning of Stab 2, baby. They didn't. We didn't. We were not inside of Stab 2 in Scream 2. They only showed the beginning in the theater. Jada Pinkett did that amazing death scene, and that was all we saw of Stab 2. So they could have been in that movie. We just didn't see
I know, and
Stab
that's what I'm saying. We don't have that relationship, so no. we should have got some of that information if they knew that I was going to take this route.
I guess you're right, but I don't want to know any of those people.
She don't want, yeah, she don't want fake, she don't want Stab. This movie is rated 5.7 on IMDb. Now rewatching, is that too much, too little, or just right?
It's probably just right. I mean, I think it should be over
a 5.7.
Yeah, give it a little bit more.
What do you got?
Maybe like a 7 or a 6.5.
No.
A 7, yeah. That's
okay, 6.5.
The first one was a 7 something when he read it earlier. Yeah,
the first one was a 10 to
no,
me.
I agree. But, yeah, I'm, saying, yeah, I but I'm saying on IMDb, the first Scream is a 7.1.
Yeah. Okay, then no. The second one was like take a 6.
What did you say? 6.9 or 6.5
or something? Cut that part out.
I don't know if it works like that. But
okay,
no.
I'll take it back. Because
it was the worst.
Right,
so yeah, it was the worst of those three. So it's right where it should be.
Yeah, 5.7 to me is a fair number. To me, the only way you are going back to rewatch this is if you guys are doing what you're doing, where we're going to start the series from start to finish and catch up.
And watch our kids. Watch it.
I think I can remember when I seen it. When I seen it, I knew it was the worst, but I didn't hate it. Like, from leaving the theater, I was like, that was the worst movie I've ever seen. It definitely was the worst one of the three they made. But yeah, that's about right.
I don't even think I realized it in the moment that it was the worst.
Yeah, I was probably hyped just from just the Scream franchise. But going back and looking over him, he was like, yeah, that was definitely the worst.
Yeah, no, this is definitely a step back. 5.7 to me is a fair number for this. I think putting it too low, like it's not a 5.2. Like this movie is not bad to me. It just doesn't live up to the incredibly high expectations of Scream 1 and Scream 2.
Yeah.
That was you guys' first podcast on the Bad Movies Worst Opinions podcast.
Hey.
What movie do you want to do next?
What movie do I want to do next?
What kind of movie do you want to do?
What kind of movie?
Yeah, give me the kind of movie for your second movie.
You know what? I want to do one of those. It's not a documentary, but when they make movies based off of people's lives like serial killers, that's what I like.
She loves a crime.
A little true crime. Please, but no, maybe a rom-com.
Okay, you know, we love to have, you know what?
Rom-com.
You know what? We'll have you come back in February when we do all black movies.
That's what we'll have you come back.
Seriously,
yeah, that
we'll have you come
great.
Back in February.
We've got opinions.
She's going to be watching Tyler Perry like crazy. Oh, mugger. He's filled with IMDb.
I
do
not like Tyler Perry.
All his movies are under a 6.0 on IMDb.
No, no. Let's not do Tyler Perry.
I would love to do Why Did I Get Married with you, too.
Bring her back to do the Kelly Rowland one that he did.
Mia Culpa. I hated that movie.
Bring her back for that one.
I hated that movie and I hated the other one too. Divorce. Is that Tyler Perry, Divorce in the Black?
Yeah, I know it is.
Remember Megan Good? You remember?
Oh, yeah. That
when he said,
trash.
I'll slap your face off. My God.
Are you trying to lose your job, bitch? That's what he said. Are you trying to lose your job, bitch?
And I kept asking Brian,
that's an all-time great line in a horrible movie, bro.
There we go. We got something good
out of
it. Yeah,
we do.
Movie.
All right. We'll watch the Tyler Perry movie in February. We figured it out. We'll do it. Next week's movie is actually, it is the 20-year anniversary of The Grudge. So that is going to be the movie that we watch next week. We getting old. We are 20 years ago, The Grudge came out. That is another episode of the Bad Movies Worst Opinions podcast. Like, subscribe, do all the things that podcasters ask you to do. We will be back next week as we continue spooky season.